winter is coming, and we need an additional $71 million for this year.
The United Nations says it needs that much for Afghanistan. It's Wednesday, December 16th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also coming your way, it took a while, but Joe Biden is now officially the U.S. president-elect. COVID vaccine is now going into U.S. arms. The trade war between China and Australia looks like it's widening. And New Zealand is defending its climate change policies. All of that and more on today's VOA Asia. The United Nations is calling for increased support for Afghanistan in response to increasing humanitarian needs due to COVID-19, conflict, and climate change. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA in Geneva.
Jens Laerke, a spokesman for the UN's Humanitarian Affairs Office, says the UN will need $1.3 billion to provide life-saving assistance for 16 million Afghans in the coming year.
That's double the number of people compared to 1 year ago. And that drastic increase is almost entirely due to COVID-19. However, for the time being, we only have half the money that we need to provide winter support. Winter is coming. And we need an additional $71 million for this year.
Afghanistan has suffered 40 years of brutal war that has killed millions and displaced millions more within the country and as refugees. Afghans have told UN officials they desperately hope that ongoing Afghanistan peace negotiations succeed. For peace to be credible, however, they say it must be inclusive of everyone in Afghanistan, especially women and girls. Besides the ravages inflicted by this war, Laerke says people in Afghanistan also have to contend with a worsening climate crisis and other natural disasters. He says life for most Afghans has been a matter of survival over the past four decades.
Their situation now has been further battered by the impact of the COVID-19 crisis. Household income and savings have disappeared and needs have increased dramatically. Almost half of children under five are now facing acute malnutrition and require treatment to save their lives.
Laerke says food and health care are primary needs. He notes aid agencies are staying and delivering relief to those in need, despite the many risks to their safety. So far this year, he says aid workers have provided humanitarian assistance to nearly 8 million people. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
We invite you to read more on our top stories by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the voanews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at voanews.com. The deputy governor of Afghanistan's capital, Kabul, is killed in a targeted attack when someone stuck a magnetic mine, also called a sticky bomb, to his car. South Korea's National Assembly passes a law that penalizes activists who send anti-North Korean material across the border. The ICC rejects a Uyghur plea for investigation of China. The Philippines targets a deal for 25 million doses of the Sinovac COVID-19 vaccine. The U.S. envoy calls for timely resumption of intra-Afghan peace talks. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. You're listening to VOA Asia. Presidential electors across the United States voted in the Electoral College Monday. They confirmed that former Vice President Joe Biden defeated President Donald Trump in last month's election for a new four-year term as the American leader. White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman discussed the mostly procedural vote with VOA's Steve Miller.
Steve, there has not been any surprises. And in normal years, we really wouldn't even be talking about the Electoral College vote because it's almost always a formality. But what is happening, of course, in the context of the president saying that he did not lose the election and the many legal challenges that were filed unsuccessfully to stop the vote or have more recounts or actually overturn the results of the election. There is considerable focus today on this formalization of the vote through the Electoral College. Now, of course, the overall outcome was never in doubt. But in past years, there have been so-called faithless electors who have tried to switch their votes. We're not aware of that happening on a Monday. And the rules have been tightened up in recent years to really prevent that. So a bit more drama than usual because there's just so much attention on it. But the outcome inevitable, Joe Biden being elected the 46th president of the United States.
You mentioned drama. There's actually heightened security in several of the battleground states, Arizona, Georgia, Wisconsin. What can you tell us about what was going on in those states that prompted officials to go that extra mile to provide extra security for the electors?
Well, because of the heated rhetoric around the post-election period and what law enforcement authorities say are direct threats on some of the electors, there were moves to prevent any potential incidents. In Michigan, in fact, they're saying that there were clear threats of violence there, and measures were taken to ensure that this would be carried out as safely as possible. In some states, we've seen police escorting the electors into the buildings and other places. Where exactly in state buildings, legislatures, that the electors would be gathering was kept secret.
As you mentioned, the president has not conceded the election yet. He's still saying that he's going to fight the results. What do we know about the campaign's plans moving forward?
The president, in the recent 24 hours or so, has claimed that there were issues with the election which cast the results in doubt, including vote tallies in one county in Michigan that, according to the president, show massive fraud. But we've just seen when this has actually gone to judges at the state level and then attempts made, of course, to bring this before the Supreme Court. The president and his allies have been repeatedly rebuffed.
VOA White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman talking with VOA's Steve Miller. Happening now in Asia, New Zealand's new foreign minister said Tuesday the country would be willing to help negotiate a truce between neighboring Australia and regional heavyweight China, who are caught in an escalating trade and diplomatic spat. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. Doses of the first federally approved coronavirus vaccine were administered to frontline healthcare workers in the United States Monday. That signals what health officials call a significant turn in the fight against the virus that has claimed more than 300,000 lives in the U.S. alone. VOA's Jesusa Maoni has more.
A turning point in the battle against COVID-19 as the first round of vaccinations in the United States begin. After witnessing the suffering and deaths of COVID-19 patients, ICU nurse Sandra Lindsay didn't hesitate to be the first in line.
I hope this marks the beginning to the end of a very painful time in our history.
The vaccines come at a critical time as the U.S. passes 300,000 COVID-19-related deaths. The pandemic continues to overwhelm hospitals and devastate the nation's economy. But with the first shipments of the recently approved Pfizer vaccine arriving at 636 sites across the U.S., and a second vaccine slated for FDA approval later this week, Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar says hope is on the way.
As we speak, vaccine is arriving at sites and in trucks and planes owned by UPS and FedEx to bring these life-saving products to the places where Americans will receive them. This weekend's shipment of vaccines is 2.9 million doses, enough to vaccinate 2.9 million people.
Starting off the mass immunization campaign are those considered at highest risk, such as healthcare workers and nursing home residents. Vaccinations for the general public are not expected to be available until late spring 2021, enough time, experts hope, to persuade the skeptics.
The existence of the vaccine alone does not end a pandemic. What you need is you need a population willing to accept the vaccine.
The pandemic's devastating reach goes well beyond the U.S. population, hence a need for a multilateral approach to ending it, says infectious disease expert Dr. Bill Petrie.
We're not going to control this unless we have all the countries in the world vaccinated. Otherwise, we're just going to have like continued outbreaks, continued problems.
Several countries, including the United Kingdom and Canada, also have authorized the Pfizer vaccine. And the World Health Organization reports there are more than 50 COVID-19 vaccines in human trials around the globe. Each vaccine, experts say, would be welcomed in the race to end this pandemic one needle at a time. Jason Samaoni, VOA News, Washington.
After you listen to VOA Asia, see it. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free and see us often on VOA Asia YouTube.
This news from VOA Asia. Samples of dust collected by a Japanese space probe from an asteroid some 300 million kilometers from Earth were better than hoped for, with one researcher saying he was lost for words when they opened the capsule for the first time. All of the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Australia is calling for China to clarify reports in a state-owned media outlet that it has banned imports of Australian coal. Rising political disagreements between the two trading partners coincide with a range of tariffs and restrictions Beijing has imposed on Australian agricultural exports. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
A ban on coal exports to China would cost Australia billions of dollars and further inflame tensions between the two countries. The Global Times newspaper said a new policy would shut Australia out of China's lucrative trade in coal. The publication, which is considered to be sanctioned by the Chinese government, reported the move would stabilise coal prices. China has unofficially banned Australian coal imports since October because shipments have allegedly been of inferior quality, and officials in Canberra are scrambling to establish if the Global Times reports are accurate. Last year, China bought $10.5 billion worth of Australian coal. There's been no formal announcement from Beijing about any ban, but Australian Trade Minister Simon Birmingham is calling on China to uphold its trading obligations.
We see these reports and obviously again, deeply troubled by them. They, if true, would indicate discriminatory trade practices being deployed by Chinese authorities, and we would urge them to rule that out swiftly and demonstrate that they are continuing to operate in a manner consistent with the type of market principles they committed to as part of their membership of the World Trade Organization and through their free trade agreement.
China is by far Australia's most important trading partner, buying about 40% of the goods it exports. Political disagreements in recent years have turned a cordial relationship increasingly bitter. Australia's decision to ban Chinese tech giant Huawei from its 5G telecommunications network because of national security concerns prompted anger in China, as did Canberra's allegations of political interference and cyber espionage. Australia's criticism of China's handling of COVID-19 also infuriated the Chinese leadership, and there have been disagreements about Beijing's human rights records, its military expansion in the South China Sea, and democracy in Hong Kong. Experts believe Australia is being pressured by China to alter its foreign policy. Diplomatic unease has coincided with a range of tariffs and restrictions on Australian agricultural exports worth billions of dollars. China has accused Australia of dumping grain and wine on the Chinese market and unfairly subsidising its farmers. Canberra is considering taking its grievances to the World Trade Organization. The Global Times also published an opinion piece that labelled Australia an anti-China pioneer with a sense of anxiety about being invaded. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Are my pets safe from coronavirus? There's no current evidence that cats and dogs can be infected. Hand washing after contact with all animals is recommended. This protects against other bacteria such as E. coli and Salmonella that can pass between animals and humans. For more information, visit the websites at the World Health Organization and the U.S. Centers for Disease and Control. A message from your friends at VOA Asia.
Thank you for being with us on VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Maria Ressa, who heads a Philippine news website known for its tough scrutiny of President Rodrigo Duterte, refused to enter a plea on Tuesday in a second cyber libel case she faces.
The irony is I'm supposedly facing a charge of cyber libel, but the charges themselves are libelous to a working journalist, right? So this shouldn't be allowed. I will take this all the way to the end, and we will win it. Because it's ludicrous.
Ressa, Time Magazine's Person of the Year in 2018, has faced a series of lawsuits that she says amount to intimidation against her and other journalists in a country previously known for upholding press freedom. Ressa's counsel, Theodore Tays, said they had agreed to a conditional arraignment while waiting for a decision on a motion to quash the charges.
The arraignment was held. It was a conditional arraignment. Maria did not enter a plea, so pursuant to the rules, the court entered a plea of not guilty. So that's the status. We're waiting for the motion to quash to be resolved.
Ressa is facing several cases, including tax offenses and violation of foreign ownership rules in the media. She said the cases are a form of harassment due to her news site's critical reports on Duterte's bloody war on drugs, during which more than 5,900 suspected drug dealers and users have been killed in anti-narcotics operations. This is VOA Asia. New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern defended her country's climate change policies, saying that comments by activist Greta Thunberg suggesting the country lacked ambition referred only to part of New Zealand's goals on climate change. Libby Hogan reports.
After climate activist Greta Thunberg took a swipe at New Zealand, suggesting the country's climate change policies lacked ambition, New Zealand's Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern defended her country's approach on Tuesday, although she admitted not seeing Greta's original tweet.
It's been described to me as a reference to our public service carbon neutral goal of 2025. And all I would, of course, give the context there that if that was the sum ambition of any government, then that would be worthy of criticism. It is not our sum ambition, and it is not the totality of our plans on climate change.
In a tweet Sunday, Thunberg said New Zealand's, quote, so-called climate emergency declaration was, of course, nothing unique to any nation. On Tuesday, Ardern walked the delicate line of standing firm with her country's pledge of promising a carbon-neutral government by 2025, whilst welcoming worthy criticism if they don't follow through with their goals. When pushed again to comment, she tapped down the snub of her country's pledge.
You know, I think it's only a good thing that there are people out there continuing to urge ambition and action.
Ardern declared a climate emergency earlier this month and has backed it with a fund of over $140 million US dollars to phase out coal-fired boilers in government buildings and to help ensure the public sector only buys electric or hybrid vehicles.
Correspondent Libby Hogan reporting. We continue on VOA Asia. A centuries-old tradition among Sikhs is helping sustain a farmers' protest in India as volunteers prepare thousands of meals for demonstrators who have been camping on highways near the Indian capital for nearly 3 weeks. The Sikh community, a religious minority in India at the forefront of the protest, is famed for serving free meals irrespective of religion. Anjana Pasricha reports from New Delhi.
Scores of volunteers roll out Indian bread called rotis, stir vegetables in gigantic pots, and fry savories along a highway on the outskirts of New Delhi. They distribute the hot meals to farmers camped here to demand the rollback of new, free market-oriented laws governing the sale of farm produce.
Sabhi langar pani ka program kar kar lekar aaye hain.
We've come fully equipped to prepare mass meals. The supplies come from the villages daily and we run the kitchen round the clock.
The community kitchens that have sprung up to sustain the protests are no surprise. Many of the farmers come from the northern Punjab state, where serving free meals to the masses is an intrinsic tradition of the Sikh faith. Called langar, it is usually done in Sikh shrines. But the community is also known to organize free kitchens wherever needed for the homeless, the poor, during natural disasters. Most recently, they distributed meals during the pandemic. Lending a hand is the norm for old and young. Jayveer Singh has been helping prepare community meals in his village since he was 10 years old.
This spirit of service is something we learned from our home and our society. We have been taught in our faith to help wherever we go.
Farmers are not the only ones eating here. Many others also join in. The Sikh kitchens are known as symbols of equal treatment.
Our inspiration is serving humanity, whether it is Hindu, Sikh, Muslim or Christian. We never see anybody's religion.
Supplies to sustain the kitchens are no problem. They come from neighboring villages and towns, accustomed to pooling resources for the greater good.
My village has told me to keep the kitchen going. They will keep sending money and rations for 400 or 500 people and have asked me not to move from here.
That means a hot meal in Delhi's cold winter is always at hand. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, New Delhi.
We continue. Millions of young Chinese toy lovers are behind the popularity of Pop Mart, a Beijing-based company that was due to list in Hong Kong after raising $676 million in an initial public offering that priced at the top of its range. It valued the decade-old firm at as much as $7 billion. Brian Wood has more.
Nearly 100 small figurines sit proudly stacked from floor-to-wall shelves of 28-year-old lawyer Wu Ge's bedroom. Some look like cherubs, others are Pokemon characters. Wu estimates that she spent close to $800 in the past 3 years buying these collectibles from the Chinese toy company Pop Mart.
When working overtime at night sometimes, I feel a bit better when I look at them. It relieves the pressure. This is the meaning for me personally.
Pop Mart is a Beijing-based company that has been around for 10 years. But just last year, its revenues tripled, according to its prospectus. The most popular item? A $9 mystery toy box that holds a single figurine, its identity unknown until the great reveal when a customer opens it in store or delivered. Its boxes have been a big hit with China's millennials. According to a report from online retailer and Alibaba-backed Tmall, Chinese consumers born after 1995 spend more on mystery toys than any other hobby, including e-sports. Lu Zhen is a business consultant.
The nature of blind boxes is that they have a lot of excitement and luck, as well as an element of gambling for young people.
That was Brian Wood reporting. Thanks for being with us. Thanks to our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Do your best to stay safe and enjoy the day ahead.